Welcome, friends, to this week's episode. I think it goes without saying that this one is absolutely NSFW, but that doesn't mean you can't listen to it on your commute, preferably on a portable speaker at full volume on the back of the bus. Very quick thing from me this week. Firstly, to say this week we're hawking for reviews. We just hit 150 almost entirely five-star reviews across the iTunes network. I'm just picking one at random here from Manda3KB in the USA, who described us as genuinely funny. She loves stories, and this podcast is excellent. It's like a fun collection of crazy tales. She often laughs out loud on her afternoon stroll, which is definitely worth the strange looks from her neighbours. And she is not the only person to describe us making other people look at you strangely, which really does feel like a raison d'etre for this podcast. If you have enjoyed our pod for either one episode or almost the full 247, please do pop to the podcatcher of your choice, leave us a little five-star review. As a seasoned podcast listener, you will know how much that helps. Two other wee things before we dive headfirst into the artful filth of this week's show. Firstly, we have got another live show coming up. We've been accepted on part of the Bedford Fringe. It's going to be on July the 30th at 2:30 p.m. Tickets are not yet on sale, but by golly gosh, you will know when they are. But plan it now if you are in or near Bedford, which is a jolly train ride away from London, or indeed Scotland, if you're feeling committed. You can come and see us there. We are hoping to play maybe two or three more pod festivals the rest of the year. We are also hopefully gearing up to some very exciting news, which we'll be able to drop next month. All we can do is tease you with that, because we also don't want to accidentally tickle the balls of fate, only for him to claim that he's feeling a little bit sleepy right now. Nevertheless, we hope that that is your appetite wet and excited. Talking of which, those are two words which are very much connected to the next hour of your life. Enjoy! Lovers and vegetables, welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that each week celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find us in the Worst Foot Boudoir, as myself and my co-host try out all manner of sexual positions on the Worst Foot Forward sex doll. Now, you might be thinking that I'm straight, Barry's gay, how are we going to make that work? Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to the world's first reversible sex doll. Karen on the front, Darren on the back. And if you're a bisexual, then you can spin it round and play the Wheel of Fortune. Now, myself and Barry have been hard at it in separate shifts, finding out the absolute best sex position going. And without wanting to spoil the rest of the podcast, I'll just tell you what's in our current workbook. We tried the donut, the flan, the persistent whelk, 3 days in Elon Musk's over-budget cruise ship, the Talmudic Fandango, Ben Franklin's rubber dinghy, Aretha Franklin's warbler, the flugelhorn, Art House Cinema, the Ned Sheeran, the Epileptic Armadillo, and the Firm Handshake. Now, I've already mentioned him, but let me just give him the introduction that he truly deserves. So please welcome the doggy in the window to my missionary in the chapel, the straightforward cowboy to my reverse cowgirl, and the dick to my dom. It's Barry McStay.
We haven't really got much Worst Foot Forward merch, but a Worst Foot Forward sex doll would be a bold first foray.
I thought you were going to say the Worst Foot Forward sex doll would just be a bowl.
It had to happen, as you said when you texted me telling me that we were going to be recording this episode.
It was only a matter of time.
The previous 246 have all been foreplay. It's all been building up to this.
Oh, so you're suggesting we're doing tantric podcasting?
A mere 5 years into the show, we finally got to sex.
Yeah, listen, I'd like to think that often this podcast resides in the stars, but occasionally we have to end up in the gutter.
You can have sex that lands you up in the stars.
Yes, you can. If you are aboard a space shuttle.
It's very much an insight into Ben and mine's attitudes just then.
So that I must tell you just two sidebars that reminded me of. Sidebar number one is that I was recently on holiday, and on the flight back, I had to change my daughter's nappy in the aeroplane toilets for the first time. And as I was doing it, a thought went across my brain, which was, I'm pretty certain this is the opposite of the Mile High Club. And the second thing I must tell you is that when I sent out the call sheet to our guest this week, little peek behind the curtain, I basically have to copy and paste all the instructions, listeners, and then change the last topic to the new topic. And I almost fucked it up by not deleting things appropriately and almost asked our guest to research the world's worst sex astronomy, I think we can all agree would have been an astonishing
episode.
There's
some sex that ends among the stars. Let's introduce our guest. Our guest this week is an actor, comedian and writer, one half of the comedy double act McNeil and Pamphilon. And if you've read the episode title, you already know which one it is, but let's maintain the illusion. As part of McNeil and Pamphilon, he took four hit shows to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. He has also appeared on the likes of Late Night MASH on Dave and the BAFTA award-winning This Way Up on Channel 4, which, according to IMDb, he played the role of Merman, either a trident-wielding Adonis or, and here's my hope, Golden Age of Broadway star Ethel Merman, in what would some describe as a rogue casting decision. With numerous other stage and screen credits from the West End to the BBC, he's also a talented voice actor, having won the prestigious Carlton Hobbs Award, and he was the co-host of Desert Island Crisps, a podcast where guests were asked to choose their three forever flavours of crisps if they were stranded on a desert island. A more knotty dilemma than it may at first appear if you consider that these people are choosing to be marooned with copious salty treats on a landmass which, for all they know, may have no potable water. He is also, according to his agent's website, currently writing his debut stand-up show for the Edinburgh Festival 2020. A throwback to a simpler, more innocent time. He's possibly best known for his role as the team captain on Darrow O'Brien's Go 8-Bit, the comedy panel show all about playing video games, which he created as part of his comedy partnership with Steve McNeil, and which was named after neither of them for the television. But don't worry, because at least here on episode 247 of Worst Foot Forward, not even your own podcast, your name is in the title, just before the words, Worst Sex.
Yep.
Please welcome Sam Pamphilon.
Wow, that's some. There were some deep cuts in there. I should point out that my starring role in This Way Up, written and starring by my good friend Ashling Bee, I played the role of various voices in the background. So basically, I had to go into a studio for a couple hundred quid and just do general hubbub and also commentator on TV in back of pub. So I didn't get a real role in that, as it were. But if you at some point you will hear probably some poor Jamaican patois in the background, and certainly that is me.
I've done the general hubbub stuff on a TV show now and again. The best one was 9 o'clock in the morning. Okay, you're all teenagers at a school disco and you're singing along really raucously to The Real Slim Shady.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's 9 o'clock tremendous. In the morning in a studio in Soho, 12 of you jumping around a microphone pretending to be 16.
Yeah.
Lovely. I'm pretty certain General Hubbub is a character in a Cluedo porno.
It's a nice credit. Anyway, I'll take the credit.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Have you found that? I was about to say it was lockdown good for your sex life, but you chose this topic, so I'm curious as to why.
Because it felt like all the others would involve me having to do some work. And knowing stuff.
Whereas you've done all your research for this one.
Not recently, but ages ago. So it just felt like, oh, well, I kind of know that one. And I don't know anything about wizards or engineering or science. I know nothing about those things. So it would be weird for me to come on and be like, well, I'll tell you what, who I think the world's worst phlebotomist is. because I don't know anything about that. So I chose this, and just because, you know, as a very sort of middling comedian, it's a cheap laugh, isn't it?
It is. I thought you were going to say, as a very sort of middling lover.
Well, that as well. Like that as well. The,
thanks, Rich. Yeah, it's cool. Well, between the three of us, I think we've managed to cover both the theory and the practical on this one. But before we dive in, we know that you are a man of multi-talents in the performance world, but what is it that you're worst at?
Lots of adults now are getting tested for ADHD and then sort of going, oh, this makes sense. And so I looked up the symptoms of it, and I was like, I'm wondering if I should, because basically time management, any kind of life admin, I live my life in a kind of, it's a constant sense of dread, because I can't get things done. I'm the kind of person that will have a letter in my bag that I should have posted a week ago, and it will just stay in my bag until someone says, for the love of God, did you post that letter? You know, I can get the form, I can fill it out, but that might take 2 weeks. Buying an envelope feels incredibly stressful. Getting a stamp also, you know, I'll get the envelope and I won't buy the stamp at the same time, and I'll just sort of keep asking my partner, or do you have a stamp? And anything like that, sort of organizing my time, getting anything done. I've got to change an energy company, I've got to do the recycling, I've got to one of my kids' things is broken, but it shouldn't have broken, so I should speak to the company about that before I take it somewhere to get fixed. And I'm just looking at all these things that are all completely doable things. You know, lots of them you could just sit down and in 10 minutes you'd get it done. But to me, they are the weight of the world, and they're all there all the time, and I tend to not get anything done. So, and it's not procrastination. I'm doing... You know, there is procrastination of us. So getting stuff done, time management, any kind of life admin, horrible, horrible. I mean, ask Steve McNeil. I mean, thank God he's, you know, he did a business management degree. So, you know, one of his main talents, Steve McNeil's main talent is just the ability to kind of, you know, put emails in folders of relevance, or, you know where they are on a hard drive, have a hard drive, use a hard drive, anything like that. I just can't. I can't do it. I recently bought Post-it notes, and they have, to a small degree, changed my life.
Wow. Do you think every double act has one person like that? Like, Eric Morecambe was, you know, used to the organisation. Ernie Wise did a hotel management degree. Something like that. There's always one. David Mitchell synchronises his and Robert Webb's Google Docs. And
is that true?
And Robert Webb's. I'm just imagining now. There's always every double act.
But the thing is, it does strengthen those differences, because once you kind of go, oh, I'm the organised one and I'm the stupid one, you play up to it. But then, of course, it became with me and Steve, it became very, very real, in the sense that he would be like, "Did you see the email?" And I'd be like, "Yes." It's like, but it was a question. Yes. Why didn't you reply? And the answer truly would be, I replied in my head. I would see it and I'd think, yeah, Thursday's good. And then I would just move on.
Because you wanted to have the symbiotic,
yeah, and it helps
mental connection of twins.
I'm genuinely an idiot. And so for many years, I became his idiot, really, like his village idiot. And now we don't work together, you know. It's impossible. I mean, how am I supposed to get anything done? He's not in my life every day.
Yeah, so it's I like the idea that double acts, basically one of you is the other's pet idiot.
One of our directors said to us at the beginning, he's like, you know, the thing about like Laurel and Hardy is they both think the other one is the idiot in a way, but they're both.
The one who is
in charge is often the bigger idiot in many ways. But I don't think that's true for me and Steve. It was definitely me. he gets stuff done, and I find it hard to get anything done. You know, and I've got three kids, and I honestly, day to day, I don't know how I manage. and not in a heroic way.
You've got excuses.
It's just I know how bad at this I am. And so, like, when I miss something or get something wrong, my view is, mate, it could have been so much worse. So far, I've not had a car crash and no one's died in a fire. You know, I mean, this is the level I'm operating on. That, you know, they are all still alive. No one has died at my hand through an error that I have made. And for that, I feel like I'm winning.
I feel like there was a yet missing at the end of that sentence.
That has to be, yeah. Well, that's the dread.
So naturally, I went to the Kama Sutra, first of all, before I got to terrible sex positions. I think a few people will know this, but the Kama Sutra isn't just exclusively a sex manual about sex positions. It's not even predominantly that. It's mainly a text that's about the art of living well. It's got stuff about courtship and training in the arts and how to be like socially engaging and charming, and then the stuff about finding a partner and flirting. Married
I found
life.
The Netflix and chill chapter very prescient.
Yeah. It turns out, yeah. The Hindu concept of Netflix and chill, really an ancient idea.
It's been around forever.
It does have a chapter on when and how to commit adultery, which I quite enjoy. It sort of brackets at the end saying probably don't commit adultery, but it leaves that to the end of that chapter.
But if
the answer is how does one commit adultery carefully.
Yeah. it's a Sanskrit text attributed to a writer called Vatsyayana. And a sutra is a type of text, it's a genre of text where it's like short aphorisms, short verses of, you know, epigrams and things to remember. And then Kama is the Hindu god of love, who's it looks a bit like Cupid. He's always like a handsome young youth shooting arrows of love. So yeah, the Kama Sutra has all these useful tips on how to get a wife and make money, and as well as making lemonade and how to teach parrots how to talk. Which is a bit of a far cry from what we imagine it to be.
Much like the Old Testament, there's a lot of stuff in there we could probably just let go now.
Yeah. according to a writer called Wendy Doniger, the Kama Sutra became one of the most pirated books in English as soon as it was published in 1883. It just, like, the Victorians went absolutely mad for it. It was the first European edition was by a chap called Richard Burton, who's a fascinating guy, which isn't a very faithful reflection of the text, because he got a translator. He didn't speak Sanskrit. So there was a chap called Forster Arbuthnot who'd done a collaborative translation with two writers, Indrajit and Bide. And he basically got their translation and went, now to spice it up a little bit. And Burton had a really long-standing interest in sexuality and erotic literature and stuff like that. But because of a thing called the Obscene Publications Act, basically you couldn't really share what would be considered erotic or obscene literature unless you had a private society. So he and Forster Arbuthnot founded the Kama Shastra Society to print and circulate books that would have been illegal otherwise. And Burton referred to the society at large and people who would frown upon his views as Mrs. Grundy. So, you know, the people who he thought like busybodies and prudes, he referred to as Mrs. Grundy as a whole.
Well, the length people had to go to just to have a wank. But
yeah, right. Like a porn subscription service. You've got to send off a stamped addressed envelope and you get a lithograph of a lady's ankle back in 3 to 4 weeks. He also believed in a thing called the satadic zone. He wrote about this and he did a translation of the Arabian Nights as well. And he had an essay at the end of it where he said there was a geographic zone in which sodomy and pederasty were endemic and celebrated, basically the bits that weren't white Europe. And it's named after Sotades, who was a 3rd century BC ancient Greek poet who wrote quite a lot of pederastic satirical poetry. Burton also spent time on his travels around the world measuring the penises of local men, exploring various gay brothels, and he's buried in a cemetery in Morden alongside his wife in a tomb that is shaped like a Bedouin tent, and I swear it's the same size as well. It's huge. And their coffins are visible. You can climb up a little ladder on the back of the tent and look through a window
no
and see their coffins inside. Yeah, in Morden Cemetery. The Kama Sutra also has stuff about same-sex relations. It talks relatively respectfully about the third sexuality. It doesn't use the term kleba, which is a quite pejorative term that might have appeared in sort of Brahmic writing about it. It recommends biting and scratching as ways of improving lovemaking, gives tips on how to arrange your house really well. It suggests you should have a pot for spitting in, a lute for hanging from an elephant's tooth, a soft bed and pots of flowers.
I like the idea of having a pot for spitting. I mean, you know, yeah. During lovemaking, you know, it really breaks the flow if you have to sort of disengage to go and hock a loogie in the toilet next door.
Yeah. What's the elephant's tooth for, though? That's a bit worrying.
It's very important to have a spittoon during sex, particularly if you're into Wild Western cosplay, which clearly they were in ancient India.
Yeah, that's why you look like the Hopalong Kid afterwards. it has an aphrodisiac solution made of sparrow's eggs boiled in milk and then mixed with clarified butter and honey, which sounds delicious.
Sounds like fight milk from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Yes. There are 10 methods of kissing. It lists the nominal kiss, the probing kiss, the touching kiss, the straight kiss, the bent kiss, the turned kiss, the pressed kiss, and the greatly pressed kiss being among them. And there are 4 ways to administer each kiss, which gives a total of 40 different ways to kiss a lover, along with 40 ways to leave them. And in April 1998, Bill Clinton was handed a copy of the Kama Sutra when he was on a walkabout in Santiago in Chile.
He got handed it.
So it was just after. He got handed it by someone in the crowd. And there are other, erotic and sex manuals. There's the Anangaranga, which is an Indian sex manual written in the, I think, the 1500s. Again, translated under the editorship by Burton and burnt by his wife after he died. He really liked this stuff.
I feel sorry for them being sort of not buried together in that sort of stone.
Well, it was quite interesting. I guess he also was working on, when he died, he was translating The Perfumed Garden, which is a 15th century Arabic sex manual by Nafsawi. And this one has lots of sexual techniques and warnings about sexual health and all this sort of stuff. Isabel Burton burnt it when he died. And she was vilified in the press. You know, who at the same time the press would have been writing articles about how horrific it would be to be publishing this filth. But then as soon as there was a chance to criticize a woman for doing anything, they wrote these articles about how terrible she was for burning her late husband's work. So, yeah, I like The Perfumed Garden. It has lists of names for the penis and vagina in one bit. So nicknames for the penis it includes are Pigeon, Weeper, Long Neck, Goat, Cyclops, Plunger, Ravisher, and Tinkler.
Good lord.
Does it follow the traditional pattern where the penis is always given the, you know, these sort of thrusting, you know, strong, you know, and then the vagina is given his almost sort of like slightly derogatory name, like in sort of modern parts.
Yeah, but I can give you some examples of the vagina nicknames. Yeah, there's the glutton, the bottomless, the two-lipped, the humpbacked, the starling.
Like monsters.
Yeah, well, I like that. He's got the pigeon for the penis and then the starling for the vagina. He's also got the sieve, the assistant, the hedgehog, the wasp, and the one with the little nose.
I feel like the pigeon taking on... The pigeon taking on the glutton seems hugely unfair. Right. Yeah. Like, that is a professional wrestling bout that only has one victor.
Yeah, I like that he's got the one with the little nose there at the end. Nefzawi proving that, dudes, I found the clitoris.
Yeah, it's a humble brag, if anything.
Yeah. Then I came to some other places to have sex and things in general to find my world's worst. Do you remember the story? You two might remember about 2015, Charlton Football Club, Charlton Athletic. There was a story about a couple having sex on the centre circle of their stadium, the Valley, in London. It was written about in the papers and so on. Young couple on the centre spot of the football pitch after hours were caught on CCTV in a pleasurable position. I didn't realise the follow-up bit of this story, which is Charlton admitted about a week later that they had sort of fabricated the CCTV footage as a way of drumming up business. They had decided they would hire out the football pitch for fans to play on and for people to have events on and so on. And they launched the offer on their website with the headline, Score at the Valley.
Someone
so this,
has to.
So this CCTV was faked. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, the commercial manager, Mark Hassan Ali, said, we wanted to launch our pitch hire program with a viral that would make football fans laugh, which just can't enjoy anything nice these days. No. I remember when the story came out, first of all, going, what a lovely fun thing. And then it turns out they were just two actors hired to lie what was probably quite wet.
Yeah, I mean, if memory ground. Serves, it's not the most well-tended of pitches.
No. I read about some celebs before I came to my world's worst sex position. James Joyce, like farty sex.
Oh, he did, yes.
Yeah.
As in farting was a fetish for him.
Yeah, he loved
it. He was a huge scatological.
I think he even uses the phrase, I might be wrong, but I think there's a rhyming couplet in there somewhere which rhymes pump with Trump.
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah. This is a letter from him to Nora Barnacle. You had an arse full of farts that night, darling, and I fucked them out of you. Big fat fellows, long windy ones, quick little merry cracks, and a lot of tiny little naughty farties ending in a long gush from your hole. It is wonderful to fuck a farting woman when every fuck drives one out of her. I think I would know Nora's fart anywhere. I think I could pick hers out in a room full of farting women.
Nobel Prize for Literature, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I mean, everyone's got a thing, haven't they? He would have loved the internet. But you know, like in the same way racists seem to think everyone is a racist when they talk to new people. It seems like James Joyce is kind of writing about that. It's like everyone's into women who fart during sex, right? It's like, you probably didn't know that letter was going to get spread around. Like, you know, hey guys, wow.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
Oh, she does fart a lot during sex. Isn't that great? And, no, not amazingly great. No, we'd rather just held it in if that's possible.
Yeah. If he'd known his collected letters were going to be published after his death, he mightn't have tried to be as successful as he ended.
Yeah, he might have helped hope that that guy's wife had burnt them. You know.
Yes,
Get rid of farty ones, please.
And H.G. Wells was a real Lothario. He had multiple lovers, and for, you know, short, balding, fat dude who was into his sci-fi. He's the pin-up boy for every geek in history. Because it turns out women loved him and he loved women. And one story I really liked from him, he got a really bad review by a critic called Humphrey Ward on one occasion. And Wells was making love to an unnamed Australian novelist, apparently, at the time. And she helped him get his revenge by having sex on top of the review. And then, when they had finished, they dressed and lit a match and burnt it. 5 stars. But my world's worst sex position comes from far less lofty literary areas. I've gone to the docu-series on TLC, Sex Sent Me to ER.
Uh-oh.
And I read about a couple, William and Leslie. This story was published last year. They opened up about how they tried to commit a sexual act thousands of feet up in the air. William says, I'm an adrenaline junkie, and she's an adrenaline junkie in training, and she loves it, and I love it. And Leslie thought it would be a really great idea to have sex while skydiving.
That's so much pressure. There's no way you'd be able to get it up. Absolutely.
No, a friend of mine.
The ground rushing towards you, her saying, come on. Just absolutely no way.
The last thing you want during sex is a woman using the Jeremy Paxman on University Challenge tone of voice.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's easy.
and equally, I don't think I'd particularly like to hear during sex, McStay, Trinity.
Well, this was not, as you can imagine, one of Leslie's better ideas. She said, since we were both wearing really baggy shorts, I just figured we could just connect without a hassle. And they were having sex. But, you know, obviously you have to keep an eye out and pull the parachute cord at the right moment. And they did pull Leslie's parachute. But in the act of Congress, they'd got a little bit entangled, and William struggled to get his open, forgetting about, regardless of getting it up, getting the parachute open seemed the more pressing concern at the moment, and he managed to break his nose in the process.
He opened it far too late to
stop his fall properly. Oh, so yeah, when he hit the ground.
Yeah, I think I know where Ben's going with this.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that they successfully had sex, he didn't open the parachute cord, and they sort of landed on the ground. She was alive, he was dead, and she ended up in A&E going, I have a lot of explaining to do. This is not the kink you think it is.
Yeah, no, Leslie said when...
My worry was you said he didn't open his parachute. It was more sort of working on the physics of it, that when the parachute opens, there is a huge jerk as obviously the parachute slows the descent. Now, if you are mid-coitus, your bodies are together, but they're not hermetically sealed together. So there is going to be a jerking movement of one body slightly away from the other one.
Yeah.
There is a real risk of some sort of cartilage or whatever it's made of. Who knows what it's made of? Genuinely, I have a friend, and she thought in her mid-30s that it had a bone in it.
Yeah.
And then,
to be fair,
there is the chance for snapping there, I would say.
Well, yeah, when they landed, and Leslie initially thought he was dead, but then William, moved, but he said the first pain was in his groin and his leg, and so he worried, I might not be done just skydiving, I might be done pleasing my woman. So they shoved some tampons up his nose to stop the nosebleed. Which just is a detail I love in the midst of all of this.
She had them on her in case she came on mid-jump.
Maybe that's why he struggled to pull his parachute ripcord. There were too many tampon, strings.
Yeah, like a sort of a weird sort of magician.
Yeah. You'll be glad to know William is fine. The doctor told him that his little buddy, as he referred to him, was okay. He's just going to need some rest. So I hate heights as well as everything else. So the sheer danger of the skydive sex was a big turn off for me. So that is my world's worst sexual position.
Mine is more of a one that we will all know, I'd imagine. I think sex is very much, it's something that you are doing in tandem with someone else. The idea is that you are aiming to please that person whilst that person is pleasing you. And that all sounds, all very kind of, lovely and Jeremy Corbyn manifesto. That is all good on paper. Very happy with the sound of that. But if you follow that to it.
Yeah, the Jeremy Corbyn manifesto is another position that I missed out in my introduction. although we all know that the Tory manifesto is just a euphemism for anal.
Hey, don't knock it till you try it. I dissociate anal from the Tory party.
This is it. You don't want to create a new mental synapse and not be able to perform, because every time you try and get it up, you've got Jeremy Hunt in your mind or something.
God.
I think I'm just now it's seeming like, very much the lesser of all those evils. But yeah.
Fine. You could call anal the lesser of two evils,
or the greater. Depending on your mood. For me, if you extrapolate the idea of trying to please two people pleasing each other at the same time, you end up with this position. But for me, this position does not work, because basically it's the 69. It's the world's worst sex position, because it requires, essentially, it's the rubbing your belly and tapping your head of sex position. you're attempting to do something. The thing is, if you're just having sort of intercourse, the movements that your body is required to do are so basic that they can be done like breathing without any kind of forethought. But oral sex is not like that at all, because it requires an enormous amount of concentration. But if you're trying to do that to someone else while someone else is doing that to you, it's a bit like trying to remember a phone number while someone else shouts another phone number at you.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, I mean, rhythm is important in all sex, but particularly in oral sex, and oral sex on a penis is generally speaking rhythmically different to oral sex on a vagina. And I sort of feel like if you were getting oral sex done on your genitalia, you might start doing it on the other person's genitalia in that rhythm, and that would be incorrect. So only one person is likely to be pleased at a time, but really, you're right, no one will be pleased.
You end up just kind of headbutting them, which if you're in a heterosexual one, is you know, just rhythmically face-planting into the vagina isn't very pleasurable for them. Also, I mean, you know, because we've got to do the whole kind of like, hey, you know, do the alphabet with your tongue. And that's incredibly, you know, you've got to concentrate very hard to do that. And the thing is, if you manage to concentrate and start doing well at it, then the other person will stop doing what they're doing because they're enjoying it too much. And so then you just basically have a situation where you've got someone sat on your face as you try to do something very complicated. And they're just basically open mouthed down the other end. It's no one can do it well at the same time. Someone has just got their mouth open going,
you are so lucky this isn't a visual podcast, because that would have been gift.
You know, at least the other person can't see it because your nose is in their ass.
Also, I just had a thought that I don't know which culture invented the 69, but at least visually it makes sense. Yeah, if you were in Rome and going, hey, do you fancy doing a bit of LXIX? Then that is so complicated physically. And you've got to ask two other mates along as well.
It makes sense.
And two of them are on a crucifix. So it's like two Romans and two heretical Christians. It's an awful situation.
Well, you could do it if you sort of laid one crucifix down and then the other crucifix in the other way.
I find crucifixes are better for scissoring.
Oh, yes. Certainly as you get older, like, so when you're young, you know, during a single sex session when you're in your 20s, you'll probably try out five positions or something like that, because it's not so much, because you're just trying stuff, like, let's do this, and it's just, you're being adventurous, and then you get older, and you're like, well, I'm not going to do that one, because that one's essentially point, we've worked out that that one isn't as good as the two that we like. So why wouldn't we just do?
Thing is, when you're young, in your 20s, foreplay is foreplay. When you're in your 30s, foreplay is like a stretching regime, like a substitute would do before they go on in a football match.
Yeah, it just makes sense. You know, the match will be better if you do the stretching beforehand.
Yeah.
God, the referee blowing the whistle is really off-putting, though.
It is. And then, obviously, in your 20s, post-coitally, you have a cigarette, whereas in your 30s, you have, like, a little energy gel.
Yeah. The Kama Sutra does have the 69 in it, but it's not called 69. It's called the Congress of a Crow in the Kama Sutra. The 69 thing, the term, or soisant neuf, that appears in the Whore's Catechism, a thing that was published in France in the 1790s.
And it sounds like another one of those names for the vagina. That's not very...
It was attributed to a female leader of the French Revolution, Mademoiselle Théroigne de Méricourt. So yeah, the term 69 feels like quite modern in some ways, but it's a French revolutionary term, it turns out. Obviously, a lot of people being beheaded during the revolution, so it was just the 11 back at that time.
Which makes the 69 very, very difficult. Yeah, I like the 11. Yeah. 11 is just hugging, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I like.
There was also a Daily Star article a couple of years ago. There was a Daily Star article last month about what was the best sex position for your zodiac sign. Apparently, the 69 is the number one sex position for people who are Sagittarius.
That makes so much sense. Oh, that's so true, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so Sagittarian. You're so
Sagittarian. They're straight to it, 69. You know. They walk into a singles bar on their hands. That's how into it they are.
I'm Gemini, which is the crab walk, which is
unfortunate.
Sort of up on top of the other. What are your star signs, just while we're on it?
I am a Taurus.
Taurus, spooning.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And Sam?
Libra.
Libra, presumably balanced across it. Against the wall for Libra.
No, again, I mean, that was in there. That was up there. The whole Hollywood movie, lifting the person, the woman up, and then easily entering them against the wall, and somehow anyone receiving any kind of satisfaction that isn't basically a stitch, a hernia, or, you know, some, you know, just impossible, stupid, you know, and...
Yeah, well, because also the one word that will kill eroticism stone dead is one sexual partner saying alley-oop. It just...
I'm going to have to put you down. The same way you do with your kids. Like, look, you're too big, I'm going to have to put you down.
What was your other nearly ran?
Well, for me, it would have been doggy style. I think it's another overrated position. I think it's another filmic idea of sex, this kind of, it's the style over substance. But it might just be because I've got I've got a long body and short legs. So my thighs, I think, are really, really short, which means in order to do the doggy position, it's incredibly uncomfortable for me. And it hurts my back. I mean, I had to kind of sort of lean in I don't know. I just never got on board with it.
I was talking to someone about this yesterday. I mean, I think, you know, sex is sort of intimate, connective act. And yet people have come up with a sexual position where they put the faces as far apart from each other as possible.
Yes.
And one person is turned around, just literally turned their back on you.
I mean, only the glory hole removes more intimacy.
My issue with doggy style is, and I think this is a very performer thing, so I hope you two recognise this. So as a performer, when I'm just going about my daily life, most of the time I'm able to act as though I'm not the lead character in the universe and that there is a camera constantly trained on me. But sometimes I feel like that, and so I will react to things publicly as though I am on the telly. And doing doggy style, because the other person cannot see you, I have found myself in the past sort of turning to camera as if to go, isn't this peculiar? Even though there isn't a camera there.
It's the worst. It's the worst. If you're having I'm in the movie of my own life moment, it's the absolute worst. Because you're on your own. And all of a sudden you're like, you know, I mean, you are, if you're doing doggy position, you are as a man, you are only moments away from flexing a bicep, looking at yourself in the mirror, or as you get older, not having to stifle the yawn. You know, you can, as long as you can do one of those quiet ones, you can sort of do anything.
Yeah, I feel like I'm pretty certain the stifled yawn is another euphemism for the vagina.
Yeah.
So since it hasn't been covered so far, I went back to basics and looked into the etymology and history of the missionary position. Obviously, what one would imagine with its name, that it didn't exist in pre-Christian times, but obviously this is nonsense. It was probably originated and popularised by Alfred Kinsey in his publication Sexual Behaviour in the Human Male, often through a misunderstanding of various historical documents. The French brilliantly referred to it as the classical position. Tuscans referred to it as the angelic position, while some parts of the Arabic world rather beautifully refer to it as the manner of serpents. Which, I mean, I have seen on a nature documentary the way that snakes have sex, and it is not missionary. It is like two pairs of spaghetti thrown against a wall against their will.
Yeah.
Other names for the missionary position include the matrimonial, the mama-papa position, the male superior position, and my favourite, the English-American position, which I...
I thought that was a diplomatic stance.
Yeah, the special relationship. What I love about it is there is, this may or may not be erroneous, but there was another sort of anthropologist called Malinowski, and he wrote a book about the Trobriander Islanders, who are out in, I think, either Polynesia or Micronesia, and it's got a very depressing title, The Sexual Life of Savages in Northwest Melanesia. Basically, he wrote about how the Trobriander Islanders used to sit around campfires and, to their own personal amusement, used to take the piss out of the missionary position and sort of do it mockingly to the people who were there. And they used to sing mocking songs as they did it. And basically, as far as their culture suggested, like, this was a preposterous way to have sex. And from their point of view, that, well, there are all manner of other positions, but particularly women on top was considered the better position. And they would be correct. Now, the Bible doesn't mention sexual positions overtly, but from the 6th to the 16th century, church authorities taught that intercourse should be face-to-face, man on top, primarily because they believed that semen flowed with gravity and that led to greater conception. Like, obviously, they can't have known that it was flowing with gravity because Isaac Newton discovered gravity in the 17th century, but I guess that...
Is that when a load of cum fell on his head out of a trip?
Had everyone up to the 17th century been wanking face down? And finally, someone turned over and lay on their back and said, wait, it goes up as well.
to a diminishing extent as you age.
Yeah.
one can only presume. There's actually a hierarchy of sexual positions. There is a saint.
Sorry, is this in Debrett's?
Yeah. Yes, if you're making love to a duchess, then it's...
You must say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must say, how is that for you, Your Grace? So, St. Albertus Magnus, or Albert the Great, is, you know, one of the great minds of the 13th century, and he was known as the universal doctor. So he wrote about all sorts of areas of human life, including sexual. You'll be unsurprised to know that as far as he was concerned, missionary was the most natural and least sinful, because obviously all sex is a sin according to the church.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then it went to side by side, seated, standing, and then a turgo. A turgo means from behind. So Albert the Great is on your side, Sam. He's not a fan of the doggy style.
Short thighs, Ben. He's got short thighs.
Yes. Although he does say that in the cases of extreme obesity, then married couples are permitted to try other positions than missionary. So he's
a 5'2".
Yeah, he's thought of the big and bouncy, so that's very, very sweet of him.
By his teaching, gluttony is also a deadly sin.
So. Yeah, so he's sort of like, I guess it's the lesser of two evils, isn't it? Literally.
Yeah, maybe so.
And there's also the Kashinawa people who use the missionary position to stay stable when they have sex in a forest stream to avoid insect bites, which... sounds truly awful.
Where are they based?
It's such a London thing to say. Oh, cool. So where's your tribe based at the moment? Well, we're based.
Where's this really watery forest that has no ground to have sex on? It's all forest streams.
And they are. They're in Brazil and Peru.
I see. Okay.
Connected to there, I did look up something about the Mayan people. So the Mayans apparently had 19 specific sexual positions for having sex in a hammock. Because basically they used hammocks to avoid snakes and ant bites and other harmful creatures. And so, yeah, they had a specific hammock Kama Sutra where, you know, people would live their lives. And these include the jaguar position, the vulture position, the light position, the serpent position, the rabbit position, which, you know, sound a bunch of fun in a conventional bed. But I've got a lot of respect.
There's this huge desire to sort of make sex so sort of zoological, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it, which is weird when you get into it, you know.
So the theory was that if they had sex on the ground or on beds, that ants and snakes would slither up into them. So they hang hammocks between trees.
Oh, well, I don't know if it was slither up into them. It was more just practical concerns of if we have sex on the ground, it's going to be quite uncomfortable. And their mates from Peru went, hey, have sex in the stream. And they were like, no, thanks. We'll stick to the trees. Thank you.
But Jaguars, you said Jaguar position. Jaguars live in trees.
Oh, God, that's a good point.
This is what could happen, though. Like, sort of midway through, sort of the person you're with could shout Jaguar, and you think, oh, yeah, I can do that one. And you try to flip around and then immediately disemboweled by a Jaguar. That's what I'm thinking about, they're naming it after animals and sort of other threats, you know.
Sam, please, don't.
Fire. Let's do tree fire.
Don't kink shame the Mayans, okay?
No,
if you're into being disemboweled by a jaguar halfway through coitus, you do you. I feel like we've talked about these things before. I had a little look at mythological creatures and the way they have sex. And there's two kind of weird ones I found. One is called a Lyderk, which is a piece of Hungarian folklore, similar to a succubus in that it's, you know, a satanic lover that appears in your room at night, some sort of winged creature, and sucks the juices from you. But I was particularly interested in how you make a Lyderk, which is via the form of a miracle chicken, which...
Yeah. Miracle chicken, yeah.
It hatches from the first egg of a black hen kept worn under the armpit of a human being. And I just enjoyed the specificity of that folklore.
That is so detailed.
It really is, isn't it? And then the other thing that I found is the, and I'm going to pronounce this very carefully so I don't end up getting a lawsuit from Disney, the Encantado. I'm fairly certain we've spoken about them before. The Encantado is a shape-shifting freshwater dolphin that adopts human form and steps out of the river to entice a lover. And in order that the human being doesn't go, hang on, that's a dolphin, I can tell, because it's got a blowhole in its head. When it's in human form, it wears a hat over the blowhole. But brilliantly, when it brings the human back to the river to have sex with them, it keeps the hat on, even though it's adopted dolphin form again.
Like a character in Sharky and George.
Yeah.
But it's almost like the hat might, the dolphin thing, goes to take the hat off, and then the person's like, oh, no, could you leave the hat on? Like, it's, you know, just...
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's where the Tom Jones song is from.
You can leave your hat on, yeah. I feel like we did talk about them with Sasha on World's Worst Mermaid. That rings a bell for me.
Yeah, it does. But they're all always worth bringing up again. But for my World's Worst Sexual Position, we are going to ancient Greece, and we are going to a very famous play written by Aristophanes. This play is called Lysistrata. And Lysistrata is the story of a collection of women's extraordinary mission to end the Peloponnesian War, which was a war between Greek city-states, by withholding sex from the men. And basically saying, we will not have sex with you until you negotiate peace with each other. They say the following thing. They say, no lover or husband shall ever come near me with an erection. I shall live all my life at home, unfucked, dressed in my sexy clothes and perfectly made up, so that my husband will burn with desire for me. And then one particular position that they say they will not adopt is the lioness on a cheese grater position.
What?
Right? And this particular phrase has baffled scholars for centuries.
That sounds like a mistranslation.
Well, you'd think, but cheese graters...
Did they have cheese?
Yeah, they absolutely did. And cheese graters were quite a status symbol at the time. There have been many tombs with people buried with their cheese graters, because I assume it was some sort of hugely sought-after item. I guess it's sort of like the bourgeois version of being buried with your sword for battle. Oh, no, I wanted to make sure I take my cheese grater with me to the great beyond. And it might have been because the cheese grater had quite a large handle, so there might be a dildo element in there with it, but actually others have looked
at it
like
fun one.
No, not at all.
You want to make sure you use the right end of it.
But, absolutely.
Yeah, well, exactly. But others have said no. Other scholars have said no. An ancient cheese grater looks pretty much like the one in your kitchen. So listen, lioness on a cheese grater on one side, woman on top, great fun for all involved. On the other side, it's a woman on top of a sharp, knobbly item, which knobbly, I imagine fun, but sharp, absolutely not.
I find using a cheese grater generally just brings me out of, like, a nervous hives, because I've scraped one along my fingers by accident on one occasion. It's just made. I'm immediately anxious using one.
Watching someone use a cheese grater on TV still makes you go, you know?
Yeah, the people, like, professional chefs who are just like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. So that, listen, the lioness part, great fun. Cheese grater bit. And it might have been Aristophanes cracking a joke. Hard to know, 2,500 years on. But even as a joke, it is a no from me. Our world's worst sex positions are Barry's daredevil position of the parachuting sex position, Sam's good on paper, bad on the bedsheet 69, and my classical position of the lioness on a cheese grater. Tricky. Mine sounds horrible in the imagination. Barry's is a one-time-only horror. And Sam sort of gets to the nub of the matter. And, you know, again, it looks good on a porn website. But again, when you actually try and do it in the bed sheets, it's tricky. What are your thoughts, gentlemen?
I have... 69 is a number I really enjoy, I have to say. It's one of my favourite numbers.
Do you know what? Yeah, but then it feels like 69 is probably more fun for gay people than for heterosexual people, because you're both doing the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you hit a critical frequency with it where you're just, you know, like a steam engine. It's just all sort of working in tandem.
It's all pistons.
Everything's moving, but it all feels rhythmic and good and...
Yeah, I think Barry makes a good point. I think it would be too heteronormative to say the 69 is the world's worst sex position. But clearly, gay folk fill. What are you meant to fill? Fill your boots. Boots. Yeah, fill your boot. Fill your
if
boots.
You're doing that, you're doing it wrong, though, guys.
Yeah. I have to say, the lioness and the cheese grater thing is just the thing that makes my skin crawl more. Most of everything. I hate skydiving, but.
Yeah, I mean, the skydiving thing, at least I know that wouldn't work out, and it would be, you know, you wouldn't go, oh, let's do that again. No one would suggest a repeat of it. And so yeah. I would say anything that involves an implement for turning cheese, nay, knuckles, into tiny little slices. I don't
and particularly know. As we mentioned, how many of these are zoological as well? It sort of captures that element.
It
too.
Really does. Okay, well, a hat tip to Aristophanes for his possibly apocryphal but definitely horrifying lioness on a cheese grater. Gosh, it's so hard not to add Morrissey going, I know, after that. It fits perfectly.
Lioness on a cheese grater, yeah. I know.
Before, and obviously, being a vegan and a woman hater and a dick, we know that Morrissey would hate that even more.
There's nothing in it for him.
No,
absolutely nothing.
Before we go, it's time for the world's best news of the week. And we go to Sheffield's Shire Green Cemetery, where there is really, truly wonderful news about a gentleman called William Collins. William Collins sadly passed away in Spain in 2020. And a week ago, there was a monument was erected to him in the cemetery where he was buried in Sheffield. And it is truly a work of art. It is adorned with four Irish flags, boasts CCTV, two life-size statues of the man himself, angels, and the word "The King" emblazoned in gold letters. And it is breaks all sorts of bylaws in the cemetery, but most people don't seem to care. It weighs 37 tons and is entirely made out of marble. And yeah. it should be pointed out, he is, a warmly remembered dad of nine, but not in any way a celebrity, local or otherwise.
Yeah.
But
I like the fact that, I think I read that article and said something like that, like monuments in the cemetery generally should be about 3 to 4 foot tall. And then you've got this enormous thing right in the entrance.
Yeah, it's great. Well, bless her. Like Councillor Alison Teal said, this memorial was built without permission and we are currently considering our next steps. We understand memorials are deeply personal. However, we must have rules in place to ensure fairness. But pretty much everyone that asked is kind of like, we love it. We want it to stay.
Yeah. I quite like it when laws sort of cease to matter. It's a bit like when Banksy started, you know, those things, and the council are like, we're not actually going to take it down, right? And then they just put the plastic over it, and everyone just agrees that it stays, you know, despite it contravening rules or whatever. And then someone cuts it out and sells it for $1 billion. But it's a lovely story.
Yeah. My favorite thing about this one is the fact it plays music. That's just
yeah,
great.
I just really hope that that cemetery just ends up with people trying to top them each other until sort of like 5 years down the line, there is a 30-story high memorial there.
High-rise
cemetery. Someone who isn't even dead yet. Like, people are getting in early, like, you know.
Yeah, they're buying up the penthouse crypts.
It's just the housing market all over again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You know, young people can't even afford to get buried. It's a nightmare. Yeah. How am I supposed to get on the death ladder?
Before we go, Sam, where can our listeners find you and what they find you doing when they get there?
Oh, I'm just knocking about doing little things on TV here and there, but at Sam Pamphilon on the socially things that I use. That's it, really. Nothing to promote.
Marvellous stuff. We're all off to Whipsnade Safari Park, armed with a ladle and a carving knife, to see what perversions we can get away with. Until next time, goodbye.
The old monkey and ladle.
Bye.